Tim Ferriss. Hi, my name is Dan Lattner, and I have found myself in a very strange situation that I would love to get your advice about. I'm happy to be proven wrong on this, but as far as I can tell, I have the cleanest awakening versus psychosis story of all time. Basically, what that means is that I had a strong subjective experience that sort of changed how my mind works, and I think it was an enjoyable, psychologically beneficial experience that left me better than before. But certain Western mental health care professionals said that it was the opposite, and that now my mind is worse than before. Their number one proof that something's gone wrong in my mind is that I think there are experiences that can appropriately be called spiritual, mystical, or even religious, and that I think I had one. I want to be respectful of your time, so I'm not going to retell the entire story here. If you want, you can go listen to my letter to Sam Harris and Jill Bolt Taylor, but let me just give you a super quick rundown. I got put in the hospital because I tried to report it to a neuroscientist, because that's what I thought you should do in 2020. I got Waking Up by Sam Harris, My Stroke of Insight by Jill Bolt Taylor, and about a dozen other articles to back me up. Then I made some phone calls. My brother had me involuntarily committed. He was in another city and never saw me. He did this against the advice of friends, who were actually with me. Like the doctors, his primary concern was that I said I thought I had an enlightenment experience. He put a lot of stuff on the form that flat out was not true. My brother has a history of psychological issues. The hospital was a total joke. They held me for an afternoon and night, and anytime I mentioned the books I brought in, they said, "We don't go by that." They released me the next morning when I threatened to sue them for violating my religious rights. When I tried to follow up with the hospital about the difference between a spiritual experience and a religious one, they just spun in circles and said, "We don't go by that," and ignored me. Now I've spent a couple years learning about this issue, found out that lots of people are working on it, and aside from the cleanest story ever, I would like to suggest that this is largely a language issue and the result of neurobiology associated with the saying, "You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink," because otherwise it does not make sense that these experiences are so ineffable that I can't even explain they exist. Make sense? Anyway, Tim Ferriss, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, because A, I think you're amazing and I trust you more than just about anybody who I haven't met, and B, this is kind of your fault, bro. This never would have happened if I hadn't read your book, and since you got me into this, I reckon maybe you'll want to help me get out of it. Allow me to explain. Back in 2012, my friend Fadger invited me out to Sri Lanka to help him manage a hotel that he'd leased for a year. I said, "Yes, of course. Where's Sri Lanka?" And then a few months later, I got on a plane. As stoked as I was to be on a new adventure, I was also kind of bummed when I got out there because I'd just had my first big breakup, and also I'd quit my bluegrass band, which had been my main goal for about 5 years. I didn't know how to deal with all those things, all those emotions, but luckily, in my first month out there, I came across a book you wrote called The 4-Hour Workweek. I was curious but reluctant. I'd never thought about self-help or personal development or whatever it is you do, and it seemed a bit cheesy, to be honest. Until that point, I'd been smearing through life, saying yes to the weirdest option, getting myself into all sorts of pickles, and all of a sudden you showed up and started telling me I could steer, not smear. I can design a lifestyle. I can set and achieve goals. These were revolutionary notions for a tie-dye tumbleweed such as myself, and I started eating better and working out. The guys who worked in the hotel nicknamed me Chaka because I could do 10 push-ups, just like Chuck Norris. Now that's what they told me. Last year, my other buddy told me that Chaka is actually Hindi slang for transgender, which means that for an entire year, I went around town saying, "Ayubawan, magina ma Chaka," or, "Hello, my name is Ladyboy." So, after 3 months of running the hotel and introducing myself as Ladyboy, I had to do a visa run, and Fadger sent me to Nepal to lead a rafting trip for his travel agency, and that's how I became an international tour guide. For the rest of the year, I alternated between managing the hotel and leading trips, and when I was in Sri Lanka, I kept studying your book. I mostly thought you were cool, but some small part of me was still scared I was getting duped by an alpha nerd just trying to make a buck. But you know what sold me? Underpants. In the 4-hour work week, you talk about these underpants called ex officios that dry so quickly you only need 2 pairs to travel the world, which is what I was doing at the time, So I bought two pairs and discovered that they are as good as you said. Fadger trolled me for spending $40 on underpants, so I bought him a pair for his birthday, and he said, "Fuck you, Dan, these are incredible. Now I have to buy $40 underpants." And that's why I trust you more than just about anybody, Tim Ferriss. After the hotel year, I turned into a full-time group leader, a turbo vagabond, and was traveling the world, leading trips, washing my ex officios nightly, and having fun. I was happily homeless, often had to think about what country I was in when I woke up, and a lot of the time, the most regular things in my life were podcasts. My favorites were Comedy Bang Bang and The Tim Ferriss Show, where you'd talk with world-class performers and figure out what makes them tick. Now, I am probably the sloppiest Tim Ferriss fan on the planet, but I liked listening to you and all your sharp, high-achieving friends talk about how you crush it and get the most out of life. I didn't have much chance to integrate your advice because my job was to scallywag around the globe nonstop, but one day in 2016, I was somewhere for long enough that I had the chance to try something that sounded totally whack, a 3-day fast. I felt unstoked at the thought of not eating for 72 hours, but you said it felt good, and you were right about the underpants, so I did it, and you were right again. Then I started noticing you and your guests talking a lot about meditation, and I thought, I felt how not eating for 3 days was hard but worthwhile, so meditation is probably like that. That's basically how spirituality works, I'm pretty sure. One way I think about spirituality is as old-timey, subjectively developed neuroregulation techniques. People try things, find out what feels good, teach other people, then the other people experience the benefits for themselves. You told me ex officios felt good, then I tried them and agreed. So I trusted you a bit more and let you talk me into not eating for 3 days, and then that felt good, and then I tried meditating and saw for myself that that felt good. No clinical studies necessary. It's word of mouth. But back in 2017, when I went on my first 10-day retreat, I didn't believe in spirituality. So when the teacher said some people meditate for brain health and some meditate for spiritual reasons and awakening, and it'll work either way, so don't worry about spirituality if you're not into it, I thought, awesome, because spirituality doesn't exist. Mostly I had a good time and my focus and calmness increased, but I felt kind of annoyed when the teacher talked about spiritual stuff. I found myself listening to stories about rafts and elephants or floating butter and thinking, Tim, what did you get me into? Anyway, I never got spiritual. I never had any of these pleasant experiences the teacher talked about, but I stayed the whole 10 days and I liked it enough to go back and volunteer in 2018. And I sat through all the nightly lectures again. After that, I still wasn't into spirituality, I'd say, but I listened to podcasts like 10% Happier, and I read Altered Traits, and I was definitely convinced. No, not convinced. I understood that monks and advanced meditators experience intense altered states sometimes. I understood it, because we can see the fucking fMRIs that show their brains doing stuff most people's don't. So that strong theoretical base was one of the reasons why, in 2020, when this interesting experience finally happened, I thought I should report it to a neuroscientist. That feeling was way more impressive than I could have imagined. I thought it would be like a mushroom trip or something, and it kind of was, but at the same time, dude, that is something else entirely. So I thought, this is a big deal, and I feel like I should tell somebody it's happening. But who? I thought, I've been a normal enough person for 34 years, and I can see the issue with saying I feel how I feel. I've got to approach this carefully so I don't get locked up, because some people will think I'm crazy just for claiming I'm having one of these experiences. What a pickle. I need to think this through. I was naive, but not that naive. I thought about it. Nobody confirmed this but me, but I thought about it, Tim Ferriss. Took a day, considered all the angles I could see, and basically concluded that I didn't know what to do. I tried to use metacognition to think about my situation. Right around the time pandemic was kicking off, I listened to an episode of your podcast where you and the guest talk about metacognition. My takeaway from the interview was something like, COVID is about to get weird. So try to use metacognition to think about your own capacity to think. Nobody has the skills and professional training to think about everything, and it's intelligent and wise to seek out experts and give the appropriate weight to their opinions. So I thought, I'm going to use metacognition. I think I can see clearly what's going on here, but I'm not sure I can explain it. I spent the last 3 weeks coming face to face with the fact that I'm impulsive, I have weak social boundaries, I have poor emotional regulation skills, I talk in circles, and I'm childlike. My brainy brain is smart, but I'm super excited, and maybe I don't have the skills to strategize about this, seeing as I'm a caricature of ADD. I wish I had someone to advise me, but I don't. Dang! Well, maybe I can think about how someone whose mind I respect would handle this, and imagine what they would do. Who do I respect? Tim Ferriss! That motherfucker knows better underpants than anybody! What would Tim Ferriss do if he were in my shoes? Tim Ferriss would try to measure it. That's how I decided to tell a scientist. Obviously, I don't know if that's what you actually would have done, but it made sense to me. It seemed logical. I couldn't explain what I was experiencing, but I was having an experience, and I figured there must be neurological correlates. Intention matters. I extend that to my brother, to the hospital, and to myself. I have poor social boundaries, and I'm archetypally naive, and I'm sure those qualities contributed to my decision, but it was a decision, not an impulse. I didn't run out of the house and start yelling about it. I thought I could help out, and that it would be useful to scan my brain in that state, but I didn't think I was the messiah or have a savior complex. I'm happy to laugh at how unfamiliar I was with the greater landscape and state of the mental health system, but I got my info from podcasts. I'm not a doctor. I didn't know anything about mainstream psychiatry. I learned about the brain from Radiolab, TED Talks, Invisibilia, and the Tim Ferriss Show, so that's why I thought trying to report it was a legit move. That's what's bullshit about this story, Tim, and also why it's so powerful. In most of these awakening versus psychosis stories, the person in my shoes flips out way more than I did. They either do something dangerous or talk in a way that's like, you know, about God or aliens or claims that we're all one or that they have magical powers. All I really claimed was that I had the type of subjective experience that people have described as spiritual, mystical, religious, etc., and that now I feel better. And as far as I can tell, the hospital's position is, we do not acknowledge that those sorts of experiences exist. Check this out. When I told the hospital, you know, there's a standardized mystical experiences questionnaire used at Ivy League universities around the world, and at least dozens of labs studying the neurophenomenology associated with these states, their patient rep said, that's a religious belief. How absurd is that? It seems to me that the only argument against me is the type of experiences that people have historically called spiritual, etc., don't exist, or that these states have been mental illness all along, and 150 years ago, Western psychiatry came along and set the record straight. Anyway, the world is funny. When I talk to non-psychoeducated, non-meditating people, they keep treating me like, well, obviously you're nuts. The type of experiences you're talking about don't exist. Spirituality doesn't exist. The hospital couldn't have screwed up that bad. You have to trust the professionals. But I'm like, are you smarter than Tim Ferriss? Are you a best-selling author? Are you insanely successful across a wide variety of disciplines? Do you have a famous podcast where you talk with world-class performers? Because Tim Ferriss has a podcast like that, and I'd bet my bottom Canadian dollar that he and his guests would agree with me about the fact that activities like meditation and psychedelics can trigger strong subjective experiences that assist with healing and psychological and even spiritual development. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I just scrolled through the history of the Tim Ferriss Show, and these are some of the podcast titles, just titles, that make me think that even if I'm crazier than I think I am, you'd generally be on my side about the important parts. I'm going to read some now. Number 14, June 17th, 2014. Sam Harris, PhD. Spirituality, Neuroscience, Meditation, and More. Number 66, The Psychedelic Explorer's Guide. Risks, Microdosing, Ibogaine, and More. 76, Rick Rubin, The Seclusive Zen Master. 94, July 31st, 2015. Tara Brach on meditation and overcoming FOMO. I'm pretty sure this is the first time you had someone on who's best known as a meditation teacher, if we don't count Sam Harris. 104. Are psychedelic drugs the next medical breakthrough? 115. Thinking about extra dimensions with physicist Lisa Randall. This is somebody who researches particle physics and cosmology at Harvard. This is an interesting one, because historically this conversation I'm trying to highlight has been between mainstream medicine / psychiatry and spiritual teachers / other kinds of therapists. But over in another corner, we've got physicists saying that there are extra dimensions. So what does that mean? 112. The magic of mindfulness. 123. Rainn Wilson, aka Dwight from The Office, on meditation. 134. The Tao of Seneca. 194. The magic and power of placebo with Eric Vance. I just read Eric Vance's book, Suggestible You, and it left me with some questions about the connection between placebo and what we've historically called faith. So, I had this experience, and it felt good to me, and I felt better after it happened. Some psychologists and therapists have told me that I'm healing, and some meditation teachers I trust have told me it was the sort of experience that they deal with, and now I'm in the early stages of awakening or pre-awakening, depending on which model you use. But then psychiatrists at Homewood told me, no, that was bad. That was wrong. Now you're sick. I didn't take them too seriously, but what if I had? I wonder how many people have been talked into thinking they're mentally ill because the only experts they've encountered are Western mental health care professionals with a narrow, pessimistic worldview. Food for thought. 201. Meditation, Mindset, and Mastery. 277. Interview with Sharon Salzberg, who is a world-renowned meditation teacher. 298, February 20th, 2018. Dr. Gabor Mate, New Paradigms, Ayahuasca, and Redefining Addiction. I didn't hear this one when it came out, but Gabor Mate is another one of the fellas who got me into this mess. I read his book Scattered Minds right before my cool experience happened, and thinking about psychology and how I'm not a unified self, just a bunch of patterns, was one of the main triggers, but that is a story for another day. 300, March 5th, 2018. Jack Kornfield, Finding Freedom, Love, and Joy in the Present. This was a big episode for me. I heard it in between my first and second retreats, and I was still basically in my spirituality doesn't exist mindset. I'd never heard of Jack before, and at the start of the interview, he sounded like a normal dude, but then he talked about going on a 500-day retreat in the jungle and having an out-of-body experience, and I was like, hold up, out-of-body? What does that mean? 313, Michael Pollan, Exploring the New Science of Psychedelics. 340, Paul Stamets, How Mushrooms Can Save You and Perhaps the World. 347, Stan Grof, Lessons from About 4,500 LSD Sessions and Beyond. 350, Andrew Weil, Optimal Health, Plant Medicine, and More. 385, The World's Largest Psychedelic Research Center. 396, Marcella Ottalora, How to Become a Psychedelic Therapist. You're a champion of responsible psychedelic use, right, Tim? The psychedelic landscape is another thing that makes my story and the greater issue of awakening versus psychosis so ridiculous. Not that I care so much about scientific studies when it comes to spirituality for personal use, but scientific studies clearly have demonstrated that strong subjective experiences can be psychologically beneficial. So why does it matter that sometimes the experiences come from compounds, and sometimes they come from breathwork, meditation, and other contemplative practices? 414, March 12, 2020. Jack Kornfield, How to Find Peace Amidst COVID-19, How to Cultivate Calm in Chaos. I think it's noteworthy that your first episode in the pandemic was with a meditation teacher. 445, Jan 11 on Extra Dimensions, Time Travel, and How to Overcome Boots in the Face. This is with a professor of physics and astronomy at Columbia University. Again, extra dimensions, time travel, What? 4:58, the Psychedelic News Hour. 4:64, September 14th, 2020. My Healing Journey After Childhood Abuse. This is tied for first for my favorite podcast episode ever of all time. Truly incredible. I'm so sorry that happened to you, and I'm grateful you shared your story to help others. It's a big inspiration to me. I'm not going to talk too much about this one, but I suggest everybody listen to it. Also, this is the episode that confirms to me that you have a general sense of the type of strong subjective experience I'm talking about. You know all about set and setting, right? So imagine ending up in the psych ward during the afterglow of one of those, being locked up and questioned by nurses and psychiatrists who have no personal experience with the territory and who do not acknowledge that Sam Harris exists. 4:77. Yuval Harari on the story of Sapiens, forging the skill of awareness and the power of disguised books. Harari, last I checked, does 3-month Vipassana retreats every year. 4:81. Dan Harris on becoming 10% happier, hugging inner dragons, self-help for skeptics, training the mind, and much more. Dan Harris was another important character in my story because his podcast helped me realize I have ADD, quote unquote. Also, his podcast introduced me to a guy named Daniel Ingram, who is a medical doctor and meditation pro who actively works on this issue I'm talking about with an organization called the Emergent Phenomenology Research Consortium. 4:85. We've got an episode with Jerry Seinfeld where he talks about transcendental meditation and special states. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. 4:92. Richard Schwartz, IFS, Psychedelic Experiences Without Drugs, and Finding Inner Peace for Our Many Parts. I think internal family systems is interesting because it encourages people to find these different parts of themselves and to listen to inner voices. Listening to inner voices and noticing that we contain multiple characters sounds kind of crazy according to an old model of psychology, but IFS is totally mainstream and not considered woo-woo at all. 5:08, Plants of the Gods. Dr. Mark Plotkin on ayahuasca, shamanic knowledge, the curse and blessing of coca, and more. Dr. Plotkin is an ethnobiologist educated at Harvard, Yale, and Tufts. What is shamanic knowledge? 5:09, George Mumford, mindfulness coach to Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant on awareness, compassionate action, the dizziness of freedom, and more. 5:21, July 7th, 2021. Dr. Andrew Huberman, neurobiologist. I love Andrew Huberman and how scientific he is, and he's always talking about the benefits of non-sleep deep rest, which is basically yoga nidra rebranded, i.e. a spiritual technology. Number 5:31, September 8th, 2021. Henry Shukman. Zen, Tools for Awakening, Ayahuasca versus Meditation, Intro to Koans, and Using Wounds as the Doorway. If I'm not mistaken, this is the first time awakening has been mentioned in an episode subtitle. 5:62. Dr. Michio Kaku, Exploring Time Travel, The Beauty of Physics, Parallel Universes, The Mind of God, Lessons from Einstein, and more. 5:85, Professor Donald Hoffman, The Case Against Reality, Beyond Space-Time, Rethinking Death, Panpsychism, QBism, and more. Again, what? Panpsychism? Beyond Space-Time? The Mind of God? Anyway, the list goes on, but I think I've made my point. In your highly respected circle, I don't think it's the least bit progressive to say that sometimes people have really, really interesting and enjoyable subjective experiences that feel developmental. You know what I don't see? I don't see any episodes called Why Mainstream Western Psychiatry is an Effective Way of Healing the Mind, or Why the DSM Kicks Ass, or Why benzos, SSRIs, and other profitable pharmaceuticals are giving meditation and psychedelics a run for their money. You're the greatest human guinea pig that ever lived, and I think it's notable that the things I just mentioned aren't really in your orbit. Anyway, I'd love to chat and pick your brain about all this. You know, old Albert Einstein said, "Imagination is everything. It is the preview of life's coming attractions." Einstein was pretty smart, So I'm going to take his advice and use my imagination to dream myself into thoughtful conversations with mainstream mental health care practitioners who probably disagree with me, and also to bring about a medical system with a more nuanced understanding of these sorts of amazing subjective experiences. To strengthen my imagination, I'm starting with smaller, more realistic goals. So, Tim Ferriss, I sincerely imagine that you will teach me how to do a proper kettlebell swing. My email is danglantern@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening. I look forward to meeting you. Love, Dan.